Imbalance IT Solutions provides a unique consulting approach to transform your organization's data, cybersecurity, and hybrid cloud environments. We would like to welcome you to our podcast series we call The Balancing Act, discussing complex digital transformation. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, listeners out there. This is Ryan O'Halloran, VP of Security Strategy here at Imbalance IT, bringing you episode 13 of the Balancing Act podcast series titled Right Size Cyber Advisory. Today, we're going to discuss an overview of what makes a strategic cybersecurity advisor, also known sometimes as a virtual CISO, a good fit for your organization's security compliance readiness and posture improvement needs. It's going to be a great episode. I have here with me an expert security advisor and chief executive officer of Malcolm Risk Advisors, Mr. David Malcolm. David, thank you for joining me, man, and it's great to see you.
Great to see you too, Ryan. I appreciate the invitation and getting the time to spend together.
Same. You know, to kick things off, David, in your opinion, you know, a lot has changed, right? So a lot has changed. We're continuing to see increasing compliance, rapid increases in threats, AIs out there now. So the knowledge set, I think, for the threats and the expectations of an audit have really kind of changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's also been sort of an emergence of their need for this type of help. So in your opinion, what are the characteristics that make an individual a good advisor? And at this point, what type of experience is necessary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and then you have to throw in the other aspect of that, of AI, and what companies are going to be supplanting consulting individuals, advisory individuals with AI, and what they think they can get, you know, from leveraging AI. So we're also dealing with that. And I think that that's what really will help differentiate those advisors that are best in class, very, very strong advisors, from those that, you know, might not have the expertise or perspectives necessary to be successful. So in my opinion, yeah, there are two traits that you generally find in every top advisor, and that's credibility and curiosity. So yeah, all advisors possess years of hands-on experience and leading transformation, managing crisis, building new digital experiences, managing crises. So they never, one thing that a good advisor never does though, is claim that they are good at everything. And, you know, for me personally, that's, I always try to surround myself with, you know, the smartest people in the room, because I know no matter how much I know of a subject, there's somebody out there that knows something more than I do. And by learning from them, learning, you know, those areas, learning consistently, you're just going to become a better advisor. So I think surrounding yourself with strong advisors is extremely important, and you know, continuously learning about your field and becoming an expert in whatever it is that you do. And then the second thing I mentioned is that advisors are creative. I don't let many speaking experiences go by without me using the line, like this line, which I think I've already used with you as well, is that the Stone Age doesn't end because it ran out of rocks. They found a better way. And that's really what the essence of advisory work is, right? Is that we're helping our clients find a better way to do things. And the more curious you are, the more ability you are to think outside the box and take risk and fail at times, the more successful of an advisor you can be. So, you know, experience itself, I think, you know, while definitely you have to have some credibility in the industry to know that you understand the requirements, the problems faced by your client, I think it also, the experience in in pattern recognition is also important. So when I say that, I've in my career, I've served as a chief information security officer, a chief audit executive, head of IT audit, IT technology risk consultant. These different roles are a combination of internal roles and client-facing roles. So it's given me a 360-degree lens view of both strategy and execution. And it's given me an experience to see the successes as well as the failures, and allowed me to then build my instincts that, I rely on, that I believe make me a strong advisor.
Man, I want to highlight on something you said, because doing this work myself, I could not agree more. I don't think people realize that part of the trust in your advisor is the fact that they do need to remain curious. I love that you pointed that out. Stay inspired, constantly be up with it, right? Because the expectations aren't entirely known of who that right. next auditor is going to be. It's their viewpoint. And yep. their interpretation, and you have to take the customer through their own interpretation. There's a level of risk there. There's not a certainty where it's like, I graduated this class and now I know 100% that this CMAC advisor that comes in is going to say this, and that everything that goes for him and works for him is going to go for them. And yeah. I think that's a personality trait. That's a human trait.
Yes.
And I think that's so cool that you hit on that, because a lot of folks don't realize that that's the type of person you are and not just the experience you have. And if you're not right now staying inspired, learning about application security, operational technology, AI and machine learning, mm-hmm. and how inferencing works, right? And all these little yep. things, if you're yep. not getting into that, you're missing the boat, because the auditors and all these people are trying to figure out how to even validate any of these concerns, because they don't know.
Right, exactly.
So you have to be prepared to do some, to paint some artwork. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's a really cool thing, I think, about what we do. And I think that speaks to the trust you have to have in somebody as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that continuous learning, if that's not embedded into you, you're not going to be able to stay relevant as an advisor. And while the term curiosity sounds a little juvenile and you think about little kids and being curious, but it's something that it applies to us as grown adults. And it's the same characteristic we need to have in order to find better ways to do things.
Yeah, we could be 20 years in IT, but we're in second grade of AI.
That's right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's a perfect way to put it.
You mentioned both having internal executive and external advisor roles. I remember at one point you had an auditor of the year even designation, which was awesome. What do you think? And those are different, right? What do you think the biggest difference is in the mindset or approach when you're advising a customer on how to become a better business versus executing compliance readiness?
Yeah. So I learned as a leader in an organization quickly that you are accountable for delivery. This is yours. It succeeds, it fails. Either way, it is your responsibility. You own the outcome. You're responsible for making things happen. As an advisor, your role is to be an accelerator and a truth teller and a second voice for the actual leader in the organization to listen to when they're seeking out ideas on how to better do things. But the best advisors, they bring objectivity, but they're also willing to roll up their sleeves to help improvement. So they'll get in there and actually demonstrate to you what they're talking about on how they can make something better for you. And by bringing that to life, I think that shows and that just demonstrates more instant credibility that you can gain with your client. So I feel like I'm able to bridge these two mindsets by, by delivering solutions that are both strategic and also executable by the client's team. So they're nothing that are, you know, one of my biggest frustrations is doing a, you know, really strong piece of work and it becoming shelfware because the client doesn't have the capabilities needed to run the solution ongoing. So, yeah. So I make sure that my solutions are ones that, you know, that they're going to be capable to use. Cause I don't want to charge a client to build, you know, the best, you know, brightest new toy and then them go back to doing things the old way because nobody wanted to take time to learn how to use the new one.
That is so important. I love that because you as an advisor need to do a cultural assessment mm-hmm. and say, you know, based on your adoption, right? Yep. I'd love for you to be here, but you know, maybe part of my job is going to be forcing discipline on your organization and being the referee 100%. Between your tech team. Right. And then the leadership team. So that it's agnostic. And by doing that, we're actually getting to the point where you're completing these tasks and you're not in a situation like you said. And that's a point of frustration for me. It's like the customer kind of wants to just finish. You know, they just sometimes, you know, there's customers out there like, let's just get past this. Let's do the bare minimum. And that's not the right thing to do. You're not writing that policy until you are living that, you know, living and breathing that. Right. It's one of the things that I couldn't underscore more. It's like, we're not adding that in until you're actually done. Yeah. Until you actually have evidence, you know, of habit. And I think that's so important because not every customer is ready to do everything all the time. As a matter of fact, over time, and I'm sure you'll agree, you kind of see this trend in pacing versus like how much they can handle administratively versus how much tactically they can actually implement within the quarter, by the quarterly business review. Yeah. And it's like, if you used to, when you start, you're like doing three or four things and then you're like, oh, move that to three things. Yeah. And then you figure out, well, that works for 90% of the clients. So that's how I'm going to roll. Right. Yep. And it's really interesting to see that as that goes on. You know, and then the other thing too is customers that are even very eager to adopt, you know, maybe they do have good habits, but now they're going to undergo a digital transformation. So now it's like, okay, maybe I'm going to go from, you know, a thick application to SaaS. Maybe I'm going to introduce shift left security into how I write software, or maybe I'm going to move from, you know, VDI to an enterprise browser or something like that, right? Now that's a big change, right, for an organization and one that requires more education even for the technical folks. AI, of course, goes without saying. Try not to say that every other line, but it keeps popping out. you know, so as you're taking them through this digital transformation and you're kind of doing these translations between business outcomes for leadership and skilling, for those that are technical, how do you handle that?
Man, I'll tell you, you know, COVID was an extremely difficult period in dealing with some clients because they knew they needed to do something, but they had no idea what they needed to do. They hear the term digital transformation and they're like, we have to do it. Like that's what everybody's talking about. But yeah, there's two questions that I always try to ask early on in the engagement before even getting started is, you know, what are you looking to transform and why are you looking to do it now? So the reason for this is that many organizations are performing digital transformation, digital initiatives without first aligning those transformation activities with measurable business outcomes. So, you know, making sure that they're focusing on transformation activities that truly are going to impact the business and that they can demonstrate that the success of those initiatives have impacted the business. Like I've been shocked at some organizations that do a very poor job of tracking KPIs and user acceptance and adoption of digital transformation tools once they've gone live. And there it's like, then you have no idea if this was a successful initiative or not, because you don't know if people are using it. And
yeah, how do I quantify this? How do I measure this? How can I demonstrate that to audiences that paid for it?
Yeah. So it's, you know, they really, you know, it's like almost as if just getting the capability in was a success. But if you got that capability in and it cost you X amount of dollars and X amount of hours, and you're not getting that return from it, then the why you chose that digital transformation exercise probably wasn't answered very well, or wasn't answered correctly, as it didn't really align to your business goals because you didn't see much impact out of that. The other thing that I look at is how the current state governance of an organization looks like when I come in, as they're getting started on their digital transformation journey. So when you usually have like a steering committee, how well is like IT risk or cybersecurity compliance, how integrated are they on these committees? Because what I see a lot of is that these initiatives aren't designed with controls at the beginning, and that by having these resources like security experts, risk experts on the steering committee, you know, providing credible challenge up front, it's going to allow you to, you know, be almost like secure from the start and build those controls in before you get started. So, you know, without doing that, you end up in a position where, you know, you could end up with significant technical debt in a matter of years because you're selecting the wrong products, and also regulatory issues that you might not think through because, you know, you don't have anybody on those steering committee calls that understand regulations or which ones would be in scope as a part of this initiative. So I think it's really important to, you know, and this is like, especially the financial services industry is a great example. You know, they usually have these product risk reviews, and historically these product risk reviews have been focused on new financial products they want to bring to market, and evaluating the risks associated with those and making a decision to go to market or going into a new market, and what are the risks, and, you know, making that decision. Now they're taking digital initiatives and taking those through the product risk review process. Well, the people that are attending those reviews, you know, they're not people that had the, you know, they're not same, you don't want the same set of people. And companies weren't realizing that. Like, no one was asking questions on resiliency and on you know, data security, and to the point where it's like, listen, you've got to revamp your entire new product and process review because you don't have the right stakeholders on the call to identify all the right risks.
That's so interesting. And, you know, that plays into, from an audit and compliance perspective, like you were mentioning, they typically, based on their culture, they can only implement technology successfully and measurably so quickly. And yet in a lot of these compliance things like CMMC, and I got my PCI 4, you know, 4 coming up, and before it was 3, GDP, right, all the privacy stuff that's popping up. You get in a situation sometimes where there's a deadline and there's like a need to hack it. And it's like, well, I do need to get to a certain level in that amount of time. So in the middle, you can't just be like them sitting there quiet in those meetings. You know, it has to be, they have to ask questions too, and they have to internalize this thing and understand it in order to be successful in that regard. And I think no matter how much you guide them, you know, technically, or you line up resources or outsource resources within those timelines, it can be very difficult to get the right people on the call. You'll often get the people you'll expect. And then a big piece of the advisory is like, okay, the 3 people that signed up that aren't on the call today, we're rescheduling.
Yeah, right.
It's we're not just doing it and their name was on the invite, right?
Right. Yeah, that doesn't count. Yeah, that's not a sign.
Right.
Off. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more how important that is. Switching gears a little bit, right? Now there's also with the emerging technologies we've talked about, like AI, right? We've had blockchain, we've had all these different things that are happening. What have you seen from the auditor perspective that's being asked of the organization? I'd be curious, like in their early stages of adoption, right? It's like, have you written a AI cybersecurity policy? Mm-hmm. And that was like the brand new policy of the year, right? And then you're backfeeding that into your HR. And like, that was one of the new ones, as opposed to one that was updated, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Curious to see, have you seen any trends on specific requirements or some things that are just totally bogus that you've had to figure out how you respond to, because I know there's both.
Yes, for sure. Cause there's, you know, there's two different types of audit departments I look at. I see one as being more forward thinking, advisory focused, being a trusted business partner to the organization, someone who the organization reaches out to proactively for help, knowing that these are subject matter experts on risk. And they'll help them. And in return, the audit department isn't going to audit them. They're going to provide them with a deliverable that looks more like a, you know, an advisory report with recommendations on, you know, how to, you know, handle compliance. Then there's still your traditional old school audit compliance functions. And all they do is test risk and controls and are more of like SOX factories and that's really all they do. They don't do any of those outside the box projects. So, you know, I spent a number of years, you know, in my auditing career at the tail end of really pushing the envelope for and calling for internal audit departments to be more forward looking and the importance of those values with your stakeholders, because if your stakeholders aren't gaining any insights from you, then they really don't have any use for you. They just view you as someone that's going to suck up their time when the time comes when you need to do an audit. But if I'm able to provide you with insights that you didn't know about because I just have a brain that works differently, thinking about risk and compliance and security, and can show them different statistics and views and KPIs and dashboards on security, they're like, wow, like this is great. So yeah. You know, you want to first and foremost definitely like build that trusted relationship and credibility with your stakeholder, and then from there that like will help dictate how much they'll bring you to the table. So is it just like you said, all right, audit, go ahead and draft up a governance policy and we'll take a look at it and see if it's even something we want to adopt or not. Two, is AI involved in the process of approving new models, evaluating the testing performed for new models to make sure it's sufficient? And then what's going to be, I think, really important coming up, and I think is going to be a big opportunity, and it's going to be a significant problem that's going to have, not a problem necessarily, but a specific competency that's going to need to be developed, is how do you demonstrate that your AI models are continually working as intended over time? So, you know, yes, you did all this upfront testing to show that you don't have bias, you don't have hallucinations, you know, you're getting the right answers, but what are you doing over time to make sure that you're not straying away from that baseline? And as we all know, like based on just, you know, the nature of data, and if it's not good data, it's not clean data, it's not coming from places you want it to come from, that can very easily turn a well-designed large language model into one that delivers fake information. So internal audit, this is a technical area. And they're going to need help. They're going to need to work with third parties that have tools that can help them do this. But to me, some of the best value they're going to be able to add, because I see board members asking this at meetings, is, all right, we put this in place 4 months ago. is it still working just as well as it was then? And can anybody really answer that?
Man, I don't know. I love that. Yeah, because and here's a way that I think about it, because I hear what you're saying. It's so early that basically the policies I'm seeing being put into place are like, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't put sensitive information in there, but the technology is maybe not in place to hold them accountable or to audit it or to prove it or any of these other things. Mm-hmm. And then by the same token, in testing your defenses, is your pen tester doing prompt injection as part of your pen test?
Right.
Right. Yep. Are you doing a data audit and not just a network assessment? Mm-hmm. Can your customer articulate the difference between a threat, vulnerability, and a risk? You know, some mm-hmm. people think ransomware is a risk. Risk is a financial loss event. Ransomware is a threat.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And the threat takes advantage of that vulnerability. And it's amazing by just creating a language where those things are understood in common within the organization, how you can eventually get there. But I think a lot of times that's totally underestimated, is there's a language. Right. And you mm-hmm. have to be very specific about what you mean, and it can't mean 100 things. Otherwise, how can you graduate to what you're talking about there? You know?
Right.
And that's huge. I have one last question for you. And this has been awesome. I really appreciate this. When an organization is out there and they're looking for an advisor, right? Somebody who does what we do. They don't necessarily know what questions to ask. Hopefully some people are listening and learning quite a bit and maybe formulating some questions that aren't as familiar with this space, just listening to us, hopefully. But, you know, in your mind, what should they ask of the advisor to make sure that they're a fit? Because like any relationship, right, you might date and it doesn't work, right?
What?
And you know what I mean? So
no.
Yeah,
all my relationships have always worked. No, I'm unfamiliar there, but I'll trust you that some relationships just don't work. But
yeah, you know, it may not be in your experience, but customers definitely. when you've picked up customers,
I meant more of my relationships with the opposite sex of those relationships. I don't know what. Yeah, those always seem to work very well for me. I don't know.
Yes.
I
guess people are people, just, you know, and they have personalities and they have good and bad days and everything else. So to be able to really strike a relationship where you're continuously mm-hmm. going through these frustrating points is huge. And sometimes, you know, the advisor's very personality or the organization's personality can make that more or less successful, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you're out there and you want somebody that fits me, you know, they want to, you know, somebody tailored to me. What types of questions do you think should be asked that could maybe help evaluate those things when there's limited time in a lot of cases to get to know each other, right? It's like speed dating at first. And then, you build a relationship in the long term. But what are the questions you ask during the speed date?
Yeah. I mean, I think, first of all, you know, that companies need to recognize that there's some advisory firms that specialize in, you know, niche areas like transformation or cybersecurity or risk. And then that might make them a more natural fit for what they're looking for. But then there are, the large advisory firms that basically say they can do anything. And it's then where you have to start questioning the value of their ability to do everything. You know, do they really have the experts that can do everything just as well as somebody who, like, this is their company and this is what they focus on? So be careful when you hear we can do anything, because to me, that typically means we can do a little bit of everything. And we're informed on it,
always,
but might not be experts on it. So I think, they might be specialists and they might be very good, but then companies better be prepared to pay the price tag for them. Yeah, that's just the way that would happen. But, you know, I think first and foremost, if I'm a client and I'm speaking, evaluating advisory firms, I'm asking, first, how do you tailor your approach to our specific business model, our risk appetite, and our culture? Now, I've worked at large consulting organizations, and I can tell you, and I hope I'm not breaking any industry secrets here, that consulting companies work off of playbooks, and these playbooks may work for one organization but not work for another. And a pitfall that they fall into is assuming that that playbook doesn't need to be adopted for the specific activity or business objective that your client is looking to meet. So keep an eye on any firm that pushes cookie cutter frameworks to you when asking about your environment. Secondly, can you share examples of clients you've worked with who face similar challenges? And this is, really specific to your issue. So if you're looking to implement a data mesh versus a data lake versus a data warehouse, those are very different things. And because you've built a data mesh doesn't mean you can build a data lake. And I can tell you that firsthand. So somebody that says they can do that just because they've built a data mesh or data lake, that's incorrect. So really, you need to get the references of, for the specific type of work you're trying to do, do they have examples of doing that? So really do your diligence on researching and to the extent they let you talk to other clients about their experiences. Because I think that, a lot of times that's again an area where consulting firms, bigger consulting firms, can overpromise and underdeliver. And
Yeah, you know where I think what the two frameworks I think I see most often where that's most pronounced, and I'm curious your thoughts, CMMC and PCI. So like for me, for instance, right, I'm a registered practitioner of CMMC, so I have some of that background and I've had formal training on that. PCI Lite, right, if you don't need a qualified, assessor, that's, I'm not a QSA. Right. So I know how far I can go. I'm honest about that. And when, if somebody needs a validated scanner and a QSA and that, then they might lend themselves more to a CPA or something like that type of a firm. And there's a middle ground there. And then they might be dealing with tons of other frameworks too. So I like what you said about, give me specific examples where you've survived that particular requirement. And how you dealt with the challenges, what were some of the failures, that you experienced and how did you handle those, which I think it is almost just as important, right? David, this was awesome. I really appreciated your time today, and I think we're very like-minded in a lot of ways that we've been working together and how we're trying to satisfy our clients' requirements. And I just like to say for, the listeners out there that, imbalance, right? And we can guide you, right? So we can help. We can help you reach your strategic compliance goals. We can help you reach your cybersecurity goals. David and I personally are here to answer questions and can work with your organization. Reach out to us, anytime. www.imbalanceit.com. Let's set up a discussion. And David, thank you for joining. Listeners, thank you for listening.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. Great discussion. Take care.
Inbalance IT Solutions wants to thank you for listening and invite you to join us for the next episode in our podcast series. Remember, Inbalance IT Solutions can help you transform your business's technology, and we welcome you to reach out to us for more information on our website at inbalanceit.com. See you on the next one.